Hello and good day to you. I want to welcome all of you to today's webinar, which is a comprehensive overview about the third and final stage of the AFMC certification. That is the submission and the acceptance of your competency case study. The purpose of today's webinar is to give you a thorough overview of the level three process. We will begin with just a simple reminder of the foundations of the AFMC certification. Then we'll be getting into the logistics, the preparation, and the requirements for successful completion of your competency case study. My hope is that all of these introductory factors will help you to understand very specifically what is required. And then the second half of today's session will be delving into specific success factors. What are those best practices that we know candidates need to follow in order to have an acceptable and successful submission of a competency case study? My hope is that the second half of today's session in particular will help you to self-assess, reflect, and decide what is the optimal timing for you personally to register for and embark on demonstrating your competency, your capability, your knowledge, your true rich understanding of principles and science of functional medicine. First of all, I do just want to hearken back to some key foundational tenets of the overall AFMC certification. This is, as you know, an opportunity for you to demonstrate and have richly validated your competency, your capability of working with functional medicine, science, and principles in your professional practice. It is a distinguishing credential that you've worked very hard in order to achieve. And as you know, this is part of continuous education, right? Continuing education, such as what SAFM offers here. It is not a foundational credential. It does not bestow any scope of practice. All SAFM students have already completed their foundational training, education, and also the appropriate license and certification needed for their particular professional modality. And the timing that I briefly mentioned earlier on which you want to embark in completing a competency case study is something I want to encourage you to seriously consider. You could try too early and have a very frustrating experience and then have to do a later on attempt. We want you to be very solid in your knowledge. And so we acknowledge that this is not only a matter of when you have completed the curriculum, but what is the point at which you've had enough of an opportunity to use what you've learned in your SAFM training in order to go from knowledge to good, rich understanding of the practical application of the information that you've learned. We highly recommend that candidates for level three have had plenty of an opportunity to experience many open coaching calls, review the KICS documents, the key interconnectedness change for the case documents that are available in an archive to all students, and then also the puzzle piecing cases, all of these collective cases being a chance for you to apply your knowledge through the lens of a particular unique complex case. You want to be confident about your ability to do so. We also like to acknowledge that the particular case that you will be asked to assess will undoubtedly present some case details that will require you to do further research, maybe into specific diagnoses or medications or dietary components or lifestyle considerations that you just may be a little unfamiliar with, depending on your particular professional history. And so you will want to ensure that you have a bit of space in your preparation time in the 6 weeks before the exam window in order to do not only a rich case preparation through a lot of practice and revisions of your map and your case assessment, but also a little time in order to do this additional research. As you know, the AFMC requires a three-step certification process, the level one and level two exams, which are based on the content and the level one and level two curriculum. And then the level three, which requires that level one and level two requirements have already been met. And beginning in 2023, registration for the level three competency case study will also require at least one module of the clinical skills inter-program. Once the AFMC certification has been earned, we do require recertification every 3 years as a way of ensuring that this credential is still being well sustained through your ongoing clinical practice and knowledge and familiarity with concepts. After you have achieved AFMC certification, we do have a requirement for recertification every 3 years. This is a requirement for ongoing learning in order to help ensure that the capability and the competence that you achieve through the certification is being maintained throughout your career. Specifically, we require that every certified practitioner complete at least 34 AFMC learning credits every 3 years. Now, you may fulfill the requirement for these at any point you wish during each of those three-year cycles. The timing does not have to be specific, and then submit a recertification completion form to finalize recertification prior to your anniversary. So a good generous period of time, 3 years in which to achieve this in order to help ensure that you are receiving the ongoing learning that you need to constantly be evolving your skills and building your confidence and capability of working with a rich diversity of patients and clients in your practice. Now, I want to share a bit about preparing yourself for a successful certification attempt proactively. Certainly, we pride ourselves here at SAFM for having a rigorous certification process and rigorous exams to go along with that. But we're also extremely committed to supporting you and providing you a rich variety of resources throughout your SAFM journey in order to prepare you. And I want to highlight a number of those that are of special importance in consideration of the level three exam. First of all, the puzzle piecing cases that you experience in your level one and level two program are powerful opportunities to use or apply the functional medicine lens to a rich variety of individuals to practice. How do you assess a case? How do you ask nuanced questions? The particular disease dynamics that are at play, a tentative session plan. There are a number of activities that you practice in the puzzle piecing cases that will be of great use because they are included within the level three exam case assessment process. The open coaching call webinars, where again, we get to see the practice of applied functional medicine through the lens of a unique individual. And then, of course, the PICS documents. You hear me say very often, never miss an open coaching call, never miss a kick. That remains some of the best guidance I can give you with regard to an easeful and successful certification experience, in particular for the level three exam. And as you well know, each KIC document includes at the end of the two pages, both a high scoring and a low scoring example of a level three chain of interconnectedness. And so, of course, these KICs and those paragraphs in particular can be powerful learning tools to galvanize your own skills for level three. So I want to encourage you in listening to this webinar, you may be fairly early on in your SAFM experience and you're looking toward what to emphasize, or you may be on the cusp of registering for your first level three exam attempt or somewhere in between. But these are four components of preparation that all SAFM students can prioritize. It's also important to practice communicating credibly, to express yourself with good scientific precision, to use case evidence as justification for your assertions, to express yourself succinctly. We have opportunities to practice that not only in the open coaching calls, but also when you're interacting with your colleagues, when you're engaging on the forum or in the Tribe Mastermind platform. There are also a couple of practice tools that we make available to you. One of them is a document called Level 3 Credible and Non-Credible Examples of Chains of Interconnectedness. That document has not only a table of both credible and non-credible examples, but it's also functions as a bit of a workbook that gives you a number of different case examples and then challenges you to put together chains of interconnectedness and walks you step by step through the process of how to do that. Of course, that skill is also the focus or one of the key focus areas of the level two course called Disease Dynamics and Chains of Interconnectedness. And certainly all of these documents and courses can be powerful tools to review in preparation for actually submitting your level three case assessment. It's also important to remember that a key part of your preparation for fully demonstrating your skills as part of the level three exam is applying what you're learning at SAFM in your own clinical practice. Regardless of whether your current clinical role or business arrangement is ideal, and it may not at all be how you eventually want to practice or how you want to change or grow, how you do this work clinically, but a key reason that all SAFM students are active practitioners is knowing that you have a clinical environment in which to use what you're learning all throughout your SAFM journey. And so I want to encourage you to continue to do that in preparation for the case assessment. Ultimately, we gain wisdom and nuanced understanding of what it's like to interpret a case or what it's like to plan an interventional a series of sessions for a unique case. There's a real honing of your knowledge and wisdom that arises from actually using it in clinical practice. And we see that as certainly something we cannot control, but we do see it as an important part of your overall education experience. And then lastly, and very importantly, we have another resource called the AFMC Level 3 Practice and Sample Exam that is available to all students once they complete their Level 2 AFMC exam. This practice and sample course will automatically pop up on your dashboard after you have met that hurdle. And it is intended to be a practice tool that you can use to gauge your readiness for level three. And also to give you a representative example of what well-scoring passing exam submissions look like. You will have access to a sample case presentation on this course page. It is, of course, not the case that you will officially evaluate in your own exam attempt, but it's a sample representative case presentation. And the tools that you need to do your own practice assessment of it, if you wish. That part is fully optional, but certainly highly recommended. It's a great opportunity to practice. And then when you're ready, you will be able to review both a high-scoring case map and a high-scoring case assessment to help set the expectation for what it takes to receive a passing score. Beginning with registration for the June 2024 exam window, review of the sample case map and sample case assessment are actually required prerequisites for being able to register for a level 3 exam attempt. So you will want to make sure to make time for that in your preparation. Now, I want to specify that the sample case assessment is not intended to be a perfect case assessment, and it's not even a theoretical one. The content in both the sample case map and the case assessment is actually a collation of responses from actual student maps and case assessments. That is what your colleagues have submitted and received a 90% or higher exam grade overall. So it's, again, it's intended to simply show you what good quality, realistic, well-scoring exam content looks like. And so this is, of course, a powerful, not only prerequisite, but also preparation activity to ensure that in looking at what is expected in a successful level 3 attempt, that you feel ready to provide that in response to the case that you actually will be assessing, that of course will be made available to you once the actual exam window opens, the exam preparation window opens. So let's talk more specifically about the competency case study. First of all, you will be evaluating a case that SAFM provides for you after you register for your exam. Once the preparation window opens, which gives you at least a 6-week preparation window before the exam window officially begins, you will have access to a webinar, an informational webinar, and also documents related to that particular case. You will, of course, want to review that webinar and those documents multiple times during the exam prep window. No further information is available about the case beyond what is included in that webinar and those documents. You are not able to gain access to that information prior to the preparation window opening, but you will be able to freely access it as much as you wish during not only the prep window, but also during the actual exam window itself. And you are free to submit your case assessment documents. I'll share more about those in just a moment. At any time you wish during the exam window, they cannot be submitted before the window or after the close of the window. What is a particularly critical component of the level 3 competency case study is that you must do 100% of the work to prepare for your case submission and to actually submit your assessment independently. You will not be able to partner up with anyone else to assess the case, discuss the case, work on formulating your case map or your assessment. The reviewing team is keenly reviewing every candidate submission to ensure that there is zero evidence of copying or overlap. You want to do this work 100% independently. And this is required in order to ensure the integrity of the AFMC credential. I want to make you aware that templates for both the case map and also the case assessment form are available on your AFMC Level 3 certification course page. If you look under the templates and practice form, you will be able to find those so that you can practice as often as you wish, which of course we highly recommend. Reminding you that plagiarism in any form, including phrases, is strictly prohibited as part of the AFMC certification process, part of our integrity clause. So again, not to overemphasize the point, but to ensure you're planning for it right from the beginning, you may not work with any other person in any component of this process, not just the submission, but the entire preparation process. No colluding, no studying together, no comparing notes and sharing ideas. We are keen as a reviewing team looking for any evidence, no matter how small, of collaboration and collusion. And this is, again, essential for following through on the AFMC integrity clause that you have agreed to throughout the AFMC certification and that you will be asked to legally agree to as part of the level 3 exam process as well. I want to share some critical components of logistics with you to help ensure your comfort and preparedness for what's going to take place in your exam attempt. I highly recommend that you thoroughly review the logistical requirements for the level 3 exam as captured on the level 3 overview page and also on the level 3 course page once it actually opens up after the exam preparation window begins. The button to submit your case study assessment and the case map will appear on the private exam course page when the exam preparation window opens, but you're not going to be able to submit your documents until the actual 10-day exam window opens. But you will be able to quickly see the buttons there that you will be able to use to submit your 2 documents at any time you wish inside that 10-day period. A caution, of course, that I want to offer at this point is that you don't plan to submit your case documents at the very last minute. This is a common misstep for level 3 candidates. I highly recommend that you proactively plan now to maximize your preparation proactively, reviewing the various course materials that we recommend, thoroughly reviewing the case, beginning to go through multiple revisions of your case assessment document, multiple revisions of your map, all of these things to take full advantage of the exam window. So although you will see that button pop up as soon as the exam preparation window opens, you will not be able to use it to actually submit your documents until the exam window itself opens, which is always open for a 10-day period. And again, we highly recommend that you plan to submit them fairly early, do your final review, and submit them fairly early inside the exam window. So if you have any tech issues or if you have any last-minute thoughts about how to further improve your submission, you have a window of time in which to do that with ease and convenience. I do want to make you aware of an uncommon but a possible outcome when your exam is graded. In a very few minimal number of cases, there is some sort of confusion regarding the exam submission, and reviewers agree that a follow-on information request is required in order to ensure that a student's knowledge and skills, as demonstrated, actually meet the requirements of for the level 3 AFMC. And if this is the case, then it will be requested via email either during the exam window or actually up to 3 calendar weeks afterward. And if this is submitted, then the student will have 5 calendar days in order to respond to the email. The questions that are asked vary significantly depending on what the issue is that has arisen. And this is, I do want to highlight, though, that this is an uncommon outcome. This is not something that is offered to many different students, but to make you aware that in some cases it is necessary in order to finalize a more equivocal exam review status. On the third Monday after the exam window closes, all level 3 candidates will receive an email informing them of their exam result, either that they passed or that they did not pass. If you did not pass, again, we want to continue to support your attempt at the AFMC certification and do what we can in order to help you to be successful on your next attempt. If you do not receive a passing score, then your email will, of course, let you know that. It will also give you detailed feedback on areas of both strength and weakness in your exam submission and a topical breakdown of your exam score so that you can see the areas where you scored quite well that don't need perhaps much more continued focus. As well as the areas where perhaps you lost more points, where you want to emphasize spending time in study and preparation for a future exam. So again, while we are making a lot of tools and resources available to you to ensure your success, there's certainly no shame in needing more than one attempt in order to pass the level three exam. This is a normal part of continuing to learn and continuing to identify gaps and opportunities for further competence. And we simply want to make you aware of what's going to take place when that happens. And then you will need to register for a future exam attempt, and that will require a separate exam fee. Only your first level three exam attempt is included. These are the specific requirements, the objectives and the requirements for receiving a passing grade for the competency case study. Candidates must submit both a MAP and a completed assessment form. They must earn a minimum of 85% of the available grading points for the MAP and the assessment form combined. And they must meet all of the listed AFMC objectives. These are also captured on the competency case study informational page. And all of these must be met. And as you are used to seeing in SAFM's educational webinars, key information throughout today's session is highlighted in blue text. This is where we want you to be particularly aware of discerning information that some of your colleagues in the past have overlooked. As I mentioned earlier, in some cases, you're going to need to do some research that goes beyond your educational curriculum here at SAFM, just depending on the unique circumstances of the case you'll be assessing. When you're putting together your case assessment, keep in mind a good litmus test for the quality and credibility of your submission is that your explanations would be well understood and credible and of influential to a keen medical colleague who is not well versed in functional medicine. So you will want to be thorough, but also succinct and scientifically accurate in the descriptions, especially the chains of interconnectedness that you offer. In terms of providing a succinct case assessment, keep in mind that all of the data fields for your answers to the assessment questions have a limited character allowance. So you're not free to give pages and pages and pages of explanation. A key professional skill that we want all AFMC practitioners to have is the ability to be thorough, but also to be succinct, and to show discernment in what are the functional medicine concepts or principles that are most important. It would be easy for any of us to try to be exhaustive in mentioning 30 or 40, 50 concepts or facts that are important to some degree. What we're looking for is your discernment from amongst those 30 or 40, 50 factoids. Can you choose the 8 or 10 that are most important? Most applicable in that particular client case. You also will, as I mentioned earlier, be required to affirm and legally agree to the truth that you worked independently on this particular case evaluation and preparation and submission, and that you did not collaborate in any way in pulling it together. We emphasize the importance of this component because by virtue of being able to run the AFMC certification virtually, which in order to bring ease to our students around the world, we have to ensure that there is still the integrity of independent work and credible assessment on each of your parts in earning this particular credential. Now let's move on to looking to some of the success factors and best practices and reasons for failure in the competency case study. First of all, this is a set of recommended step-by-step actions that we recommend you complete in preparing for and putting together your case assessment. You are certainly free to approach this in any way you wish, based on your particular work style and study style, but this is a series of actions we have learned over the years is most likely to set a candidate up for success. And you will note right here from the beginning, the importance of not procrastinating and the importance of accessing the competency case study informational page and reviewing all of the submission instructions carefully now, so that you're not surprised by anything as you move along in your preparation process, and certainly not at the last minute. You're going to want to review the case webinar and the associated documents at least twice early on in the prep window, and going ahead and building your initial map so that you know the disease dynamics and the key case details that you want to work with. Go ahead and decide and delve into the additional research that you know you need to do in order to expand your awareness of the case factors or the disease dynamics at play in the case. Regenerate the map at least a couple of times before you put together the final best effort map for your case submission. Practice the case assessment form multiple times so that you're not confined by the field limitations. Practice over and over again so that you know you're putting forward your best effort, even amidst the field limitations. We know that while there is a limitation there, through the success we've seen in some really exceptional case submissions, it is very feasible to submit a best effort within those field restrictions. Lastly here, we encourage all of you, after you've completed your map, you've completed your assessment, to take a break for a couple of days and then come back to your case materials and review them yourself again one final time and ask yourself, is this the best effort that I have to offer? Is this the best I can do in impressing the reviewer with my knowledge, my keen understanding of this case? And if I were a reviewer looking at my materials, would I be impressed? Or would I think that this is a person who is only moderately competent? Put yourself through that lens in order to see where you might be missing an opportunity, where you may have some weaker responses to the case questions, where you know you can do better. Make the time to ensure that you are giving this your planful, thorough best effort. Common pitfalls, I want to mention these. They're definitely some unique case submission pitfalls every so often, but the reasons why people fail are remarkably consistent. The first of them is straightforward and plagues any process, and that is procrastinating, waiting until the last minute. You don't want to do that. This is an important official credentialing examination. We need to see evidence that you've taken it seriously, that you've prepared mindfully, you've reviewed material repeatedly, and that you have made the time in order to ensure that you have the best effort showing in your submission. We're going to be not only providing this webinar and the competency case study informational page for you, but you'll be receiving emails throughout the exam prep window to guide you, to give you some helpful tips on how to prepare But it is, of course, up to you as the certification candidate to take advantage of all of this support. Not thoroughly proofreading your submission. It's just an unprofessional practice. Of course, you will want to do this. You do not want to be the victim of autocorrect errors, spell checking errors. Similarly, do not use excessive abbreviations. Some small, mild use of abbreviations that are readily understood in the healthcare community are certainly welcome, but people have definitely failed the level three process because of using excessive abbreviations. Focusing on generic points of interconnectedness where the submission points sound more like a textbook. They're missing that key devil in the detail of a real live client case. We want to see your ability to pull out the critical factors in the context of this particular case that you have been asked to assess. Using high level, what we call hand waving generalizations is the number one reason why people fail. It basically shows that people have memorized associations, but they don't actually know how to scientifically explain why those associations are there. Again, you want to impress the reviewer that you know why antibiotics might have caused leaky gut. We want to know what specific components of a client case indicate that they have inflammation. What specific symptoms are evidence of inflammation? High-level generalizations and associations that look more like someone was referencing a handy-dandy chart or is parroting something they read in a webinar or heard in a class, but that they don't richly understand themselves is the most common reason why people fail to pass the competency case study. In addition to specifying those mechanisms, those scientific concepts, on the other hand, sometimes people explain things well and are scientifically credible, but they're not using evidence from the case to show that those dynamics are actually at play. There's no evidence. Their chain of interconnectedness is not justified. We're not bringing alive the actual client that the case is about. So the chains of interconnectedness are unsubstantiated and are therefore not credible. This is the second most common reason why case assessments fail. Submitting a map that is of low resolution, obviously the candidate is responsible, just like proofreading and being ensured that their assessment form really represents their best effort. You want to make sure that your map is legible, that it's easy to read. If you have poor handwriting, type up your map. You don't want your drawn lines and arrows to be so numerous that they're hard to follow, that they aren't logical, that they don't show discernment. You want to be thoroughly responsible for the quality of what you actually submit. Similar to that is not practicing. I'm amazed at how often people will share after they failed that they were surprised by the field limitations in the assessment form. Again, this is a failure to prepare proactively for the exam and submission instructions. You may use some mild abbreviations, but if you use excessive ones, to where the reviewer can't follow your argument or your chain of interconnectedness is not understandable, then you are going to lose points when the reviewer grades your assessment. And so excessive use of abbreviations or not preparing to be discerning within the field limitation of the responses is the third most common reason for failure. And then again, we're looking for a balance. We're looking for you to not be so broad-based, you're throwing in every imaginable case detail in an effort to be comprehensive to where you're not showing any discernment. this and 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 this contribute to leaky gut. Okay, wow. How? What is the mechanism? And instead of throwing in 13 factors, pick the two or three or four that you think are most credibly contributing to the leaky gut, give evidence of them at play in the case, and then explain the mechanism via which each of them scientifically is likely to be contributing to leaky gut or whatever other disease dynamic you're mentioning. You don't want to be so wide open that you're not showing any discernment, but at the same time, you don't want to be so narrow that you're failing to use case evidence and you're sounding more like a textbook and speaking theoretically. Like you're parroting a webinar without bringing alive who is this person that this case is describing. Now, I do want to show you some credible examples. These are excellent chains of interconnectedness that have been provided by your colleagues and successful level three submissions in the past. You can step through these and keep in mind that we give you many, many, many other examples that you can use in seeing credible chains of interconnectedness role modeled. In the open coaching call KIC documents, there's an extensive archive of these available that you can access from your student homepage. And then the credible and non-credible examples document that is available to you on the competency case study informational page and also on the level three exam review page. You have plenty of examples of what to do and what to not do. It's up to you to plan proactively to practice over and over again until you're sure that your own chains of interconnectedness meet this same threshold of credibility in order to receive a passing grade. But I do want you to note in all three of these examples that there is a progressive chain of causality that has at least three factors in it, often more. For the key components, there's evidence. So for example, we don't just say there's stress. We bring alive the client by specifying what are the factors in the case are evidence of the stress or evidence of a high glycemic diet or evidence of some other case factor that you think is at play. You may want to use lab markers as evidence, right? If you assert hypothyroid function, what's your evidence that there's hypothyroid function? Well, in this case, we see labs as evidence of that, and we see symptoms that are credible evidence of that. Note here that the lab markers are expressed as required in the instructions, the name of the marker, the actual value, and then the normal reference range, the lab published normal reference range. And then there are mechanisms described that are also credible. We're not just saying, oh, this person has stress and so they have insulin resistance. That's not credible. What is the mechanism via which that stress creates insulin resistance? Oh, it's the stress raising stress hormones, which causes elevated blood sugar, which over time can promote progressive insulin resistance. And there's evidence of this, right? You don't need super long chains of interconnectedness. You just need to practice using an economy of words in order to specify the disease dynamics, give evidence to prove that they're at play in this case, and then to specify the mechanisms that enliven them. And I want to take that to the next level by giving you some tips on creating chains of interconnectedness. Again, you've seen these over and over again in the open coaching calls and the various case discussions, like in the puzzle piecing cases that you've experienced in the curriculum. But I think an interesting way to think about a chain of interconnectedness is a bit like your musculoskeletal system. When you're putting together a chain of interconnectedness, begin with the bones, right? The solid bones of the chain that you want to connect. And then what's the connective tissue that starts, well, let me start first of all with the muscles, right? Bones are there for solid strength and foundation, but it's muscles that bring action to the musculoskeletal system, right? This is the enlivening of your points with mechanisms, right? We can't just start, say, stress equals insulin resistance. No, it doesn't. That's not credible. What are the muscles? What are the mechanisms that enliven? How do you get from point A to point C or D? And then how do you support and connect the muscles to the bones, right? And actually provide that smooth credibility with other soft tissue, right? It's the analogy of the joints and the ligaments and the tendons, right? This is your evidence. What are the key case details? So here's an example for you. In pulling together, first of all, let's start with the bones. What are the important disease dynamics that stand out to you in this case? And again, you may see 20. You don't have enough room in your case assessment to talk about 20. That doesn't show your discernment. What are the few that you want to build, for example, your core chains of interconnectedness about? What are the most important ones? We don't want to see you just pick the easiest ones. Well, what are the most important ones in describing this exact case? And pick those bones. And let's just say, for an example, we may review a case and we may say, okay, insulin resistance, hypothyroidism, and stress are big factors here. So you want to pick the bones, and you must pick at least three for each chain of interconnectedness, right? And you may see more. Ideally, you see more to impress the reviewer with the sophistication of your chains. You may see four, you may see five that have some interconnectedness, but you must pull in at least three. And then think about, how do I begin to state credibly, okay, A contributes to or causes B via these mechanisms, and then B causes C in this way, and here's my evidence, and here's the mechanism, and then C causes D, right? It doesn't have to be a circular. You don't have to say from A to B and B to C and C to D, and then D worsens A. Sometimes there is a circular chain that you can credibly highlight, but we're looking just for your ability to create this logical chain of causality. After you've chosen the bones, then you can start to build that cascade of causality with the mechanisms, right? So add the muscles, right? What are those mechanisms? So again, all right, I can't just say stress leads to insulin resistance. I got to specify the how in there, right? That actually gives some credibility to that. And so we end up with something like the example you see here, which is scientifically credible, right? But then that's not enough. We've got to add the targeted case details that substantiate, that give evidence that the theoretical thing you arrive to in the part two is actually present in this exact person. We want to present evidence that is actually at play. And this is where we add key aspects of history or diet or symptoms or lab markers. You've got to prove that the theoretical chain of interconnectedness you put together that may be scientifically credible, but it's not credible in the context of this case unless you pull out discerning case evidence to convince the reviewer that that is the case. So again, I'm giving you some examples here. Please do not use these examples in your own case formulations. We're doing this to provide additional training information and guidance to support you in putting together your own unique pen from scratch chains of interconnectedness in response to the other case assessment questions. So what you see again here in the final point is a credible, well-received, high point scoring chain of interconnectedness, right? Now we've got disease dynamics like insulin resistance, right? Stress-mediated insulin resistance. But now we've got case evidence that it's at play. We've described the mechanisms via which this would happen. So it's convincing. I see that you have the ability to assess a case. I see that you have ability to pull out a discerning list that's thorough, but not wide open blue sky, but it is thorough. It's appropriately thorough and discerning in pulling out case details. You can put together a chain of interconnectedness that is scientifically credible, but then also shows you picked the items that are most important in explaining through the functional medicine lens what is at play in a unique case. So to just give you some additional examples, here is what not to do. I'll leave these up to you for you to go through and study this list. I recommend you do it now and then also do it again once you put together your best effort at the case assessment to make sure that you have not done any of these things. But you can start to see where these pitfalls lie. If you use sort of peer-to-peer tribe type shorthand language, right? We use language like this in communicating with one another, like sluggish thyroid, sluggish anything, but that's not scientifically credible. That doesn't specify a mechanism. It doesn't meet that litmus test of being credible to a third party medical colleague who's not very familiar with functional medicine. Sweeping statements lack mechanisms. A series of arrows may be scientifically credible. There's too much abbreviation here. They may be credible, but where's the case evidence? How are you justifying it's at play in this particular case? Sometimes mechanisms are missing. Sometimes case evidence, especially lab work, is not being described in detail, right? You need to specify the marker, the value, and the normal reference range. And then maybe you want to say something is high. When you say high, you need to mean clinically high, meaning outside of the reference range. If you mean suboptimal, then say suboptimal, right? Suboptimally low or suboptimally high, because the value you're mentioning is inside the normal range. But you know, through functional interpretation of that lab marker, even though it is normal, it's still suboptimally high or low. Make sure that the ones you choose to highlight in that way are credible based on your education. Sometimes there's a basket of factors that are not speaking to the specific implications, right? Nutrients needed to complete X, Y, Z, A, B, C. Okay, what nutrients? And why are these relevant for this case? Guessing at an etiology without evidence. Using repetitive factors or chains of interconnectedness in the various assessment questions. Sometimes people will be so focused on one particular disease dynamic, they mention it 2, 3, 4, 5 times in their chain of interconnectedness, and it's not showing appropriate breadth of discernment of what's at play. While you may repeatedly mention case factors, because obviously something like husband committed suicide, the stress of that may be at play in multiple disease dynamics. We don't just want to focus on the stress of that as being the singular most important disease dynamic at play. So there can be some repetition of case factors, but you need to show the breadth of your knowledge in mentioning multiple disease dynamics. I think the other comments here are likely self-explanatory. You see here some good examples of unprofessional expression due to trying to cram too much information into the limited field space or excessive use of abbreviations. And then taking a look at just one final example, right? I showed you an example of how to build a good, credible chain of interconnectedness. Here's an example of a submission that's not acceptable, that loses a lot of points. with regard to a chain of interconnectedness. And again, just talking you through why it's not acceptable. You can see here, this is really, it's not a progressive chain of causality. It's really more what I might call a jumble of things that are kind of related, and saying that this basket of things somehow collectively results in some disease dynamic. That's not credible. It's missing the mechanisms that explain how these things are interconnected. There's no logical flow. And there are also generalizations without evidence, right? There's assertions here of food sensitivities. There's assertions of intestinal permeability. There's assertions of biocongestion. Based on what? What's the evidence of that? Convince me it's at play in this case. And so you see here an example of using case information to put together an unacceptable chain. Here's an example of how you could use information in order to put together a credible chain of interconnectedness using some of these same topics. So again, rather than a jumble, rather than a theoretical association, what we see here in this credible and acceptable example, first of all, you see case evidence. You see, for example, lab markers and dietary information. You see the mechanisms, right, that would actually be at play in creating the disease dynamics that are asserted. And again, what I want you to mention is there's not 17 factoids included in this point. I think many candidates fail because they think they need to be over the top complex. And that's not the case. Sometimes trying to throw in too many factors or too many questionable disease dynamics damages your scoring. What you want to do is show discernment and then do a really good job of creating credibility and evidence of what you're asserting, being more thorough with fewer things so that your point has credibility. All right, so I hope this has been helpful to you. I hope it helps you to decide when you uniquely feel prepared to dedicate some time for 6+ weeks during the exam prep window to have a best effort submission in the competency case study. That may be sooner. You don't want to delay and delay and delay and not trust your skills, trust your understanding, trust your current knowledge, but you also don't want to attempt level 3 too soon. And so somewhere in there is a balance for you as a unique practitioner. And I encourage you to make use of this webinar again in order to decide when you are best ready to give your submission, not just on the chains of interconnectedness, but also in the other questions included in the assessment. The particular case that you'll be evaluating is changing depending on the exam window you undertake. The questions that are included on the exam also vary depending on the exam window you register for. Here are some final best practices and pitfalls to consider. So going beyond chains of interconnectedness, you may be asked to comment on, oh, what would you do in your professional practice to support this person? How would you lay out a session plan? One of the things we're looking for is for you to bring yourself and your practice alive in your specific session plan. Being able to lay out what you would do. Why are you doing that? What do you expect to achieve with those particular interventions or areas of patient education or additional lab work? Share what your modality is and let it shine through in your assessment. Maybe you're a chiropractor, maybe you're a health coach, maybe you're a nurse practitioner, maybe you're a nutritionist, maybe you're a physical therapist. We expect to see your modality shine through in your session plan, and we encourage you to do that. You want to be sure, as I mentioned earlier, to speak to lab markers credibly. You may have a targeted exam questions separate from the chains of interconnectedness that ask you to comment on lab markers. And you want to make sure that you do so clearly and using the actual lab data shared in the case. You may be asked a question about supplements, supplement recommendations or contraindications, this type of thing. Make sure that if you talk about supplements in your session plan, that the way you answer the separate supplements question is actually consistent, that it actually hangs together with regard to your discernment. Make sure you don't create uncertainty in the reviewer's mind about your comprehension by having one strategy in your session plan, but then answering the supplement questions in a way that's inconsistent with what you conveyed in your session plan. Make sure that the responses to all of your exam questions hang together. And again, going back to that question I mentioned in the beginning, after you put together your best possible map, your best possible case submission, come back to it after a couple of days of rest and look at it with fresh eyes. Look at it with beginner's mind. If I were the reviewer, would I be impressed? Would I be delighted? Would I share my responses as an exceptional example of credible case assessment? Make sure you hold yourself accountable for your best effort right from the beginning. So with that, I want to thank you all so much for joining us, and I want to wish you the best of success, but also the best of ease and confidence in preparing for the competency case study hurdle in your AFMC pursuit. And by engaging proactively, thoroughly understanding the requirements and the instructions proactively, planning your time wisely, you can bring some ease, some enthusiasm to this process. Thank you so much, and I wish you happy preparation.